Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, where we talk politics Iowa style and explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as I am each week by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, awfully good to be with you again.
Yes, Dennis, nice to talk with you.
Laura, as we know, last week the state legislature began its session for this year, and on Tuesday night, Governor Kim Reynolds gave her annual condition of the state address. And the big topper, the headline on that night was she proposed that Iowans pay a flat 4% income tax rate. That was the showstopper on Tuesday, the proposal everyone started talking about. Let's start talking about how that would work, a 4% income tax rate.
Yes. Well, first of all, the Republicans in charge of the legislature are very interested in that tax proposal. They haven't exactly said that they'll pass it in the same form that the governor is proposing, but it does seem like it has a realistic chance of passing. Iowa is one of the states, most states have what's called the progressive income tax structure. So the higher your income is, the higher the percent you pay in state income tax. And in this case, the governor would, over the next 4 years, she would reduce that so that the various different tax brackets would go away. And by 2026, everybody would be paying 4%. Now, there's a lot of dispute over how much money different people would save. The governor's office was talking about an average savings of more than $1,000. The Democrats say that, in fact, the median of the governor's office disputes that number. But so it's not really clear. What we do know is that when you have a flat income tax, generally speaking, that means more of the benefits go to the people higher on the income scale, because as a percentage, they're getting a much bigger tax cut than the people in the middle income who maybe right now are paying an effective tax rate of 4.4%.
Right. And Iowa, if it were to pass this, would join 10 other states with a flat income tax rate. Just in case you're interested, it's Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Utah, and New Hampshire. Now, what Democrats in Iowa are saying is it's not a great idea because it would mostly impact upper income salaried people, but also it would result in a tremendous amount of revenue reduction for Iowa.
Yes, it would. And the governor's office is claiming that revenues have been growing at such a good clip that if you assume that the revenues will continue to grow over the next 4 years, then that could make up for the revenue loss that's coming from this income tax cut she's proposing. I mean, the thing is that there are other over the next few years, as we've discussed on previous shows, phasing out the inheritance tax in Iowa. All of those things will cost tens of millions of dollars. And so it's not clear whether the numbers add up. The governor has not introduced a bill with the details of the tax plan that she's proposing. So there are still some questions we don't have. I should say also for Governor Tom Vilsack for 6.5 years. And he was saying that when you're talking about the fairness of a tax system, you have to look more at more things than just the tax rate. So for instance, Massachusetts is a state that has a flat tax, but they actually have a more fair tax structure by some measures than Iowa does with the progressive income tax structure that we have, because Massachusetts has a lot of tax credits and benefits and things for people near the lower end of the income scale. So there are a lot of other ways that a policy can be structured to make it seem almost progressive, even with a flat income tax.
Right. Now, the governor's 4% flat income tax rate was a popular one among Republicans, but she also proposed that the state no longer tax retirement income. And that was also popular among Republicans.
Yeah, Republicans have been moving in that direction for quite some time. I mean, there's dispute over how much that would do to keep retired people in the state of Iowa. As you know, a lot of people move to warmer climates. They move to be closer to grandchildren. And so it's not clear how many people are making their decisions based on the tax rate of various states.
Right. She also proposed last Tuesday night cuts to the state's unemployment system. And this is pretty consistent with what the state's been doing, trying to get people back to work, cutting federal benefits for unemployment. So this was, again, pretty consistent.
I'll be watching this one very closely. As we've discussed in the past, only a small fraction of Iowans who are not part of the workforce are currently receiving unemployment benefits. So the governor's proposal would be to cut from a maximum of 26 weeks that people can receive unemployment now to a maximum of 16 weeks. So that's quite a big reduction. But of course, a lot of people who are not working are not getting unemployment, or if they do receive unemployment, they're not on for the full 26 weeks. I'm also waiting to see what happens. There's a specific part of Iowa code that allows people who lost their jobs because of a plant closure to get an extra 13 weeks of unemployment benefits. And last year there was an effort, the Republican controlled Iowa Senate passed a bill that would have eliminated those extra 13 weeks, and the House Republicans did not pass that bill. So there already was an unemployment benefit cut bill that didn't make it through the Iowa House last year. And so I'm waiting to see whether there could be some real opposition in the Iowa House Republican caucus to some of the governor's ideas on this.
And the governor had more to say last Tuesday night. This was her condition of the state address. She proposed $1,000 retention bonuses for teachers, law enforcement, and corrections officers. Let's talk about that.
Yes. So the reaction from the education community was really not too favorable for this. The governor is planning to use federal funds that are part of the various pandemic relief packages to give bonuses to people who did certain public-facing types of work during the pandemic. So, as you mentioned, law enforcement, corrections officers, and teachers who were teaching in person during the pandemic. But a lot of educators were saying last week that $1,000 bonus is really not that much, especially since it's only going to be for 1 year, spread out over a year. It doesn't work out to very much. And the governor is proposing a 2.5% increase in state aid to public school districts, and that is not going to be enough to keep up with the rising costs. And we've seen the general trend over the last 10, 12 years is that the state legislature every year has approved a very small increase in state aid to public school districts that generally hasn't kept up with the rising costs of those districts. So what people were saying in the public education world is that schools are still going to be further behind under this budget proposal, even if teachers get a $1,000 bonus.
And you're talking about public schools. She also proposed last Tuesday night scholarships to let parents pay for their children to attend private schools. Again, she's talked about this often in the past. She really believes in this.
Yes, and this is a bill, again, the Iowa Senate approved this idea last year. There were a couple of dissenting votes, but not much. And then the Iowa House, which last year had 59 Republicans, now there are 60 Republicans. They did not have the 51 votes in the House to pass this bill that would divert, whether you want to call it vouchers or education savings accounts, the concept is the same. It would divert a portion of the public school money to private schools. And I think the governor has tweaked the proposal a little bit this year to try to address some of the concerns from the rural Republican lawmakers so that a fraction of the money would go towards smaller school districts. I think the concern was that this would benefit larger communities where private schools exist, parochial schools. There are a lot of small towns and rural counties where there really aren't any private schools. So they could potentially lose money, and yet their families would not have the benefit of being able to send children to a private school. So I'm, again, looking to see the details of that bill. That's one that has run into trouble in the House Republican caucus in the past. And it's so I would say it's an open question whether there will be 51 votes to pass it this year. But certainly it is a priority of the governor. So she'll probably put quite a bit of political capital into trying to get that one through.
Now, there's no question that schools are going to be an issue for Republican candidates all across the country this year. Republicans have found this to be a divisive issue that benefits them. So last Tuesday night, the governor jumped in on this a little bit. She accused some school administrators of pushing their worldview onto students, mentioning debates over library books at rural school districts in Iowa and across the nation. So this seems to be a fertile area for Republicans right now.
Yes, she mentioned that there is some X-rated material available in public school libraries and that she didn't think that was appropriate. Again, these are the same debates that have been happening in some school districts. For the most part, these are not books that are assigned reading in any classes. These are books that are available to be checked out in the library. And that's something that a lot of educators were saying last week. I think that we'll see I haven't seen any bill actually drafted to address the question of library books. The second ranking Republican in the Iowa Senate, Jake Chapman, he still wants to beef up prosecute educators.
Yep. And we hear you. Are you still there?
And I think that what, yep, what, What I was in the middle of saying was that the governor, when she was talking about the material, the supposedly X-rated material in school books, she didn't go as far as Senator Jake Chapman in talking about criminally prosecuting. She wants to give control over to parents about what their kids can access in school. And so we really need to see what the proposal says, because it's one thing to say parents can control what their own children can read or check out from the library. And it's another thing to say that a small number of parents can control what's available in the library for every student in the district to check out. And so that's what we didn't really see from the governor last week.
Right. Let's tell our audience that it is 13 minutes after the hour, wherever you're listening. This is KHY Community Radio's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bell, and we're here every week at this time. And as I told folks during the time you were away from us, Laura, that you are on Zoom. And so occasionally there could be a dropout. You're having some problems, and we all have during this time. I'm on Zoom as well from across the country. But we are Zooming on. And by the way, I mentioned that Sammy the dog has made an appearance here tonight as well. Though I resisted the option of saying that where the show is going to the dogs, Laura, I did not say that. All right, let's move on now. After the governor's speech on Thursday, Iowa National Guard Major General Benjamin Correll said the federal coronavirus vaccine mandates are no doubt going to impact our organization. He didn't come out to say it directly, but it appears he's saying those vaccine mandates that the federal government's putting on the Guard, boy, that's going to hurt us. That's really going to hurt us.
Well, on the other hand, though, he said that they were at full capacity in terms of personnel. So it was a little bit unclear. I mean, he didn't give any specifics about how many people they expect to leave the Guard over this issue. So I would like to see how it plays out. I think sometimes where we've seen in larger corporations that impose vaccine mandates, where ahead of time, a lot of people said that they would quit rather than get the vaccine. But then when push comes to shove, a lot of people do end up getting the vaccine.
Right. Okay, well, we've talked pretty much about the condition of the state address last Tuesday. Let's move on to some other things here. Democratic State Representative Todd Pritchard announcing he will not seek another term in the Iowa House. He announced this last week. He's a Charles City Democrat. How big an announcement is this?
Well, it wasn't too surprising. When he stepped down as House Minority Leader last summer, that was seen as a sign that he probably wasn't going to be around after the next set of elections. And so I wasn't surprised. It was notable because he is the last Democrat right now in the legislature representing a small town and rural district. There used to be a lot of rural Democrats in the Iowa legislature, as much as at some points in history, a third of the caucus was from the rural counties. And now Todd Pritchard was the last one left. So unless the trends change dramatically in November, the House and Senate Democratic caucuses next year will be left with no rural Democrat. A nation of more than 10,000 in his district.
Okay, let's talk about the makeup of the Iowa legislature this year. You analyzed this on Bleeding Heartland last week. We know the House has 60 Republicans and 40 Democrats. Let's talk about the gender breakdown and the racial breakdown on that.
Yes. So this has been a steady march, I would say, of Republicans of gaining more and more seats representing rural and small town Iowa, and Democrats making a few gains in suburban districts, but not enough to counteract those trends. So large for the Republican caucus, for either party to have. It's just by historical standards, most the Republicans have had a majority in the Iowa House since 2011, but only for a couple of years was it as large as 60-40. So the gender breakdown, it's not, there are 31 women, 69 men. So the high water mark for women in the Iowa House was a few years ago when there were 34 women. It is still a predominantly white chamber. However, there are more people of color now than I think have ever been serving in the Iowa House, with 6 African American members, 1 Latino, and 1 Asian American member, and the other 92 representatives are white.
Now, the state Senate has 32 Republicans, 18 Democrats, 38 men, and 12 women. Now, here's an interesting thing. All current senators, as you have reported, are Caucasian.
Yes, and that's been true for almost the entire time that Iowa's been a state. There were 8 years in the 80s, early 90s, where there was one African-American senator, and there was a short time period from 2009 to 2011 where there was one Asian-American senator, and that's been it. So there's never been a Latino elected to the Iowa Senate. There's only ever been one Black person and one Asian person. Tom Mann was the Black senator. He represented the Iowa City area, and Swati Dandekar represented the rural, the suburban Cedar Rapids area for a brief time. She stepped down before the end of her term in 2011. I was going to say, I'm sorry, 32-18 is historically a pretty large majority in the Iowa Senate as well. It's not the largest right. that there's ever been, but this is 26 is the bare minimum for a majority, and this is a very comfortable majority.
Right. It means Republicans can pretty much do whatever they want this year in the state legislature.
Yes, I would say so, except for confirming the governor's nominees. The Democrats still have the ability, if they hold together, to block those, because it takes 34 votes out of the 50 in the Senate to confirm a nominee, and there are only 32 Republicans.
One more note on the state legislature. You reported that Americans for Prosperity, the Iowa branch, had announced its first two endorsements for Republican legislative primaries. Now, this is a Koch-funded network. Why are these endorsements newsworthy?
Well, these are districts where the winner of the primary is going to be the next representative. And so I found it interesting because I wanted to see what this Americans for Prosperity, it's a very active Koch-funded chapter. They register positions on dozens of bills every year, and they're obviously trying to shape the Republican caucus. They're not satisfied with just having a 60-40 Republican majority. They want to have certain types of Republicans who are more in line with them on their issues. So that's why I'm keeping an eye on that. Similarly, I'm keeping an eye on some Democratic primaries in safe Democratic seats, because although those primaries won't affect the overall composition of the legislature, it does make a difference what kind of Democrat is elected from a safe seat like that. So that's why I'm keeping an eye. This year is in Northeast Iowa, the ones where the Koch brothers group, Americans for Prosperity, made their first endorsements. And I don't think those will be the last GOP primary endorsements we see out of that group.
Let's turn our attention to the coronavirus now. It's a big deal in Iowa and getting bigger. First of all, the governor's condition of the state address included very few references to the coronavirus pandemic that has killed more than 8,000 Iowans. You wrote on Bleeding Heartland that she had given up trying to fight the virus. Explain that, please.
Well, it was striking. I mean, hospitalizations across the state last week crossed the 900 mark for the first time since early December of 2020. The state has extended its contract with the traveling nurses and respiratory therapists. I learned last week that the state is contracting with a vendor to set up a coordinate hospital transfers, because it's such a big problem right now. The shortage of hospital beds is so acute that staff have to spend a lot of time on the phone looking for an ICU bed somewhere. And so they're having someone set up a centralized state hotline, essentially, for hospitals. And this, under normal conditions, that something like that would not be necessary. So I thought it was striking when the hospital system leaders, including the CEO of Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames, in hospital leaders all over the state saying they need people to get vaccinated, to wear masks in public places, to limit their social gatherings right now, because there's a lot of concern about what's going to happen in the hospitals over the next 4 to 8 weeks. And so I was surprised not to hear anything from the governor at all. I mean, we know that the governor doesn't support mandates, and that's been very clear, but she didn't even make a pitch to say, look, I need more people to step up and get vaccinated. Right now, even if you don't like wearing a mask, it's important to wear a mask for the next few weeks when you're out in public. There was just nothing like that. So you would think, listening to her speech, you would think that the pandemic was over. The only references to the pandemic were in the context of delaying broadband expansion, fewer people participating in the workforce, and as we talked about near the top of the show, the $1,000 bonuses that she's proposing for teachers and first responders and corrections officers who have worked during the pandemic.
All of this coming as the coronavirus continues its rampage through the state. The State Department of Health reported 182 more deaths from the virus last week, among them Prairie City Police Chief Michael German. And the health department reported on Monday 36,731 positive tests for the virus. That's up 4,000 from Friday. The state's 14-day positivity rate, 24%. This is really, not to put too blunt a point on it, this is really approaching a disaster here.
It is, and it's not clear how many of those cases are breakthrough cases. The Iowa Senate Democratic leader, Zach Walls, announced on Twitter on Sunday that he had tested positive. Of course, he's fully vaccinated and boosted. At least one other person associated with the Senate also tested positive, or people right now testing positive. And even if only a small fraction of them end up hospitalized, it's causing a lot of concern because the typical hospital stay for a COVID patient is very long compared to the hospital stay for someone who just is there recovering from surgery, for instance.
Right. And we know that the number of long-term care facilities reporting an outbreak of the coronavirus in Iowa jumped to 56 today, up from 50 on Friday. So it's spreading there. The leader of the University of Iowa Hospitals predicted that the Omicron variant would continue to slam the state for weeks. He is begging Iowans to take precautions until it recedes. I wonder if that message is reaching out to those who have not been vaccinated. I wonder if anything's reaching out to them.
I don't know, but I've been hearing from healthcare workers that hospitals are having meetings to discuss crisis standards of care. So, for instance, that would mean that they wouldn't necessarily provide surgery or hospital stays for some people who would ordinarily get it. I mean, it's getting to be a very dire situation in hospitals with over 900 people across the state hospitalized for COVID. And that doesn't include anyone who's needing hospital care for a broken hip or a heart attack or a stroke. It's a lot. And even in September and October, when the hospitalization numbers were bouncing around in the 500s and 600s, that was already too much for many hospitals to bear. And I've seen some people write about how even before this pandemic, the U.S. had relatively little slack in the system. So on any given day, a fairly large share of ICU beds were taken a lot of times with people recovering from scheduled surgeries. And so those things are now possibly getting postponed. I know that in Davenport, they had talked about, and in Cedar Rapids, they had also talked about postponing some of those elective surgeries. And so it is a dire situation. The hospital leaders are very worried right now.
We have about 3 minutes left. While all of this was going on, the U.S. Supreme Court last week blocked a federal mandate that would have required employers with 100 or more workers to mandate vaccines for those workers or test them on a regular basis and require them to wear a mask on the job. A major defeat for President Biden. Governor Reynolds called that decision a major victory for Iowans, their personal freedoms and liberties. Again, it's consistent with her belief that the federal government can do nothing, should do nothing in Iowa to help out on the coronavirus.
And it was a split decision in the Supreme Court. They did allow the vaccine mandate to go forward for healthcare facilities that receive Medicare or Medicaid dollars. That was a 5-4 decision. The other one, striking down the mandate for businesses with more than 100 employees, that was a 6-3 decision against the Biden administration. So at least in the nursing homes and the places that receive Medicare and Medicaid dollars, there should be more people who will be required to get vaccinated in the next little while when that rule goes into full effect. But the large employers, as you mentioned, I mean, that has been fairly effective. The employers that impose their own vaccine mandates have seen very large compliance. So Tyson Foods, for instance, in Iowa, says that 99% of their workforce has been vaccinated. And that's been, of course, the meatpacking plants are where some of the worst outbreaks were early in the pandemic.
Right. The Ames Tribune is reporting that we know that students are returning to Iowa State University on Tuesday of this week, and coronavirus cases and test positivity rates are now higher on campus than they have been in more than a year. The positivity rate has recently gone up from below 6% on campus to more than 38%. We know that the Board of Regents across the state has recommended that the three state universities, the public ones, have in-person learning. I wonder if the universities are at all prepared for what's about to happen here.
And there are no mask mandates. Not only are there no mask mandates at the state universities that students wear masks either during a regular class meeting or if they come in during office hours. A number of private colleges in Iowa Grinnell College is requiring both vaccines and masks. Drake University, which is a private a school based in Des Moines does not require vaccines, but does require masks. And Drake decided to start the first 2 weeks of the spring semester online to get past some of the worst of this Omicron wave. And so we'll see if that gets extended. But the Regents, I don't know. I mean, they're getting a lot of people together in dorms and lecture halls. And from what I hear, wearing masks routinely.
Good luck, everybody, on this one. Laura, we have about 40 seconds left. What do you expect from the state legislature this week?
I'm looking for more bills that are introduced and some signal, particularly in the education area, hoping to hear from some of the Republicans about whether they're favorable for some of these book banning proposals and also shunting money, public money, into private schools.
All right. Well, we will be back with you. Laura, we're out of time now. Thanks for being with us. I know it's been a difficult show because of Zoom problems, and we welcome Sammy the dog here, and we appreciate him being here. So, Laura, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You have been listening, and we are grateful for that, to Capital Week on KHY Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHY or its staff. Laura and I will Zoom right back here in this time slot next week, we promise, when we'll have the latest on what's been going on politically, both inside and outside the state capitol. Until then, we thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We truly appreciate it, and we do value it. So between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.